Hello, everyone. This is episode 39 of the iPhone Podcast. For show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. I'm your host, Gary Ng from iPhoneinCanada.ca, and I'm here alongside Justin Louis. We are your hosts for the iPhone Podcast. Justin, how are you doing?
I'm very good. We're back to recording Sunday nights. I hope to keep it on schedule, but I will say right off the bat that next Sunday, WWDC is the next day, Monday, so we'll record Monday night after WWDC in case Steve does a keynote and there's big exciting news. So look for a new episode late Monday night next week.
I think it's going to be revolutionary.
Yeah, we'll see.
Anyways, we have some really interesting news this week and some great apps to recommend, so let's get right to it. Top story here that we were talking about here is the App Store dominates the 2011 Mobile Webby Awards. For those who aren't aware of what the Webby Awards are, they're basically awards that basically highlight any sort of web awards for particular apps or websites. They now have a mobile section, and one of the notable winners that was from Canada is the Pizza Pizza iPhone app. Pizza Pizza is a pizza chain in Canada, and they created a really fun and innovative app that allowed you to order pizza, and they actually won the app for handheld devices for ordering food. I think that was pretty cool, and I happened to be looking down the list, and I noticed that every single winner had an app from the Apple App Store, which I thought was pretty crazy.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either till you mentioned it. And then going down the list, literally every single category, the winner was the iOS version that either won or they have several versions. And the other thing, as you go through it, most of the apps are actually apps that we've recommended on the show. MLB At Bat won a bunch of awards, Angry Birds, Pandora Radio, Dropbox, Foursquare, Flipboard, which is like
even
my
pizza,
favorite
pizza.
News app. Yeah, and Pizza Pizza. I haven't tried that Pizza Pizza app. It looks like a cool app, but I don't think it makes their pizza taste any better. So,
yeah, I think there's going to need to be a better app for that. I know that they've had a few stores on the West Coast here in Vancouver, and some of the stores, I don't know if they're still up and running, but it's not very popular out west because there is a lot of competition from other stores. But it's nice to have an app where you can just order and pay for your pizza right on your phone.
Yeah, it's very popular here in Ontario. There's 5 per every city, but it's not very good pizza. But I'm sure there's a lot of people who do like it. I live about 5 minutes from the U.S. border and about 20 minutes from Buffalo, so I'm spoiled with really good Buffalo, New York-style pizza. So,
God bless America, I must say. I love shopping down in the States. It's just a whole new experience. Speaking of our fellow friends down in the U.S., iPads are now on the flight decks of Alaska Airlines aircraft. This is part of their new effort to use technology to enhance flight safety, to make things more efficient, and to also protect the environment. Alaska Airlines has announced that they will be issuing iPads to pilots. So these iPads will replace up to 25 pounds of paper flight manuals that they typically would carry when they fly. It will be finished by mid-June, and if this successful trial is complete, they're going to talk about using iPads as, I guess, on all of their airlines. So, I mean, first off, I think it's great that they're adopting iPads to use in the sky. But secondly, I just think that nothing can replace paper in an emergency. And, you know, if there is an issue where there's an error with the iPad or it's damaged, your flight manual is done. Whereas if you have a book, you can still turn the pages. It doesn't require any sort of battery or anything. So what are your thoughts?
I never even thought of that angle. That was pretty negative of you to think of that, but it's actually makes sense. We talked about the hospital in Ottawa using iPads. I'm going to put these stories in every time I find them. I think it's cool. These old tried and true industries finding unique ways of using the iPad. The one thing that really jumped out in my mind when I read this article was it said the 1.5 pound iPad is going to replace the 25 pound paper manuals. How big and how many sheets of paper? Like 25 pounds is a pretty heavy book those guys are lugging around. So anything to any unique uses of the iPad, I'm pretty fascinated by. I also thought it was interesting that they mentioned right on the article that they're using the Goodreader app, which is a popular app that really handles PDFs well. So that's another nice plug for a Goodreader that an airline is using their app.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I've watched Lost. I'm a big fan of Lost, so that's the first thing I can think of. They're on an island and they need a flight manual, but they don't have anything to charge their iPad. That would be a problem.
Yeah, or those things you always see on 24 where they have those EMT explosions that wipe out all the electronics. So
you're exactly right.
They better keep a paper one on board.
That's what I'm saying. So maybe this it'll be a nice addition. Anyways, moving on here. Apple is rumored to add widgets and revamped notifications to iOS 5. This is a rumor that was reported on TechCrunch. We've seen a couple concept videos of what people think iOS 5 will bring. Now, this latest rumor talks about widgets and newer notifications. Now, for those who are into the whole jailbroken iPhone or iPad scene, you probably already read that Peter Hedges, from the creator of Mobile Notifier, he's created a really awesome tweak that makes notifications really seamless and intuitive and integrated into iOS. And this is a jailbreak tweak. It's absolutely free and open source. There was a story earlier that he suddenly reported that he would be leaving his project, and he sort of made almost a riddle out of his final blog post that you know, he's leaving, but he can't say why, but he's telling people that it's, you know, it's going to be worth it. He ended his post with some sort of cryptic note. One of our readers on our blog kind of put two and two together and referenced it to Steve Jobs' speech at Stanford, where he said to stay foolish and stay
hungry.
I can't remember. Stay hungry, stay foolish. It was the back cover of this magazine that Steve had talked about before. So anyways, there's, you know, conspiracy theories. Did he just get hired by Apple? Are we going to see, you know, him working on future versions of iOS? Obviously, he's not saying anything. I think, you know, he probably is being assisting or helping or just about to work for Apple, because why else would he just shut his mouth suddenly so quickly out of nowhere? That's just my theory anyways.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot to discuss there. First of all, if you haven't seen that Steve Jobs Stanford speech, go up on YouTube and watch it. It's an amazing speech, kind of almost like one of those life-changing speeches. If you really listen to what he's saying, it's pretty inspirational. I think the idea that there's going to be a new notification system and new widgets in iPhone 5, I don't know that TechCrunch has any inside knowledge. Apple seems to have done a really good job keeping everything a secret this year, but I think it's a no-brainer. The current system isn't that great. It's probably the weak point of the entire operating system. Apple, far as I'm concerned, has some of the best widgets ever when it comes to what they do on OS X. And now you've seen Google and these other people implement widgets. Apple's kind of the widget king and didn't use it for iOS. So if they figured out a way now at these devices, I think the original reason they didn't use these type of things was because of the battery life, the processor. Apple will forgo features in order to make it a snappier, better battery life situation. So I think we will see those things on there. And then far as this jailbreak guy, I haven't jailbroken in a long time. I've heard nothing but good things about his system. I find it a little weird that Apple would ever work with a jailbreak developer. I don't think they really appreciate that community in general, but the fact that the guy open sourced it and seemed to be a good citizen, I guess there's a pretty good chance the way he worded that there's something going on. And like I said, hopefully next Monday we will have a lot to report on iOS 5, and I'm sure notifications are going to be prominent in that discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I think the jailbreak community has helped Apple immensely in terms of what people have wanted. I mean, prior to the App Store being introduced, people who had jailbroken iPhones they were downloading little tweaks and little apps from prior to Cydia. There was Installer and other app stores that allowed people to download other apps. So, you know, for example, that one, I can't remember the name of that app now, the one that would let you film video, live video, and stream it to the web. I think they got bought out.
Quick?
Yes. Quick first made its debut on the jailbroken side. And that was how they first came to life. And it was a really popular app. And eventually, you know, they made their transition to the App Store. So I think, you know, what people have pushed for and what people want on their iPhones, they've asked for better lock screen notifications. I mean, look at the real estate of our lock screens. You know, it's just a wallpaper sometimes. A lot of real estate that could be used there. So, you know, I think this is just inevitable. I think the current system, like you said, it's archaic. It's old. It's easy, right? It's almost like Apple has made it easy for people to just get used to not really focus on the notifications, but just sort of to emphasize other areas of the phone. So this is just part of their roadmap. As you can probably imagine, they're just training us and telling us what to do.
And I think it comes down to more the experience of the phone. I think, like Apple, as I said, has used widgets in the past on their desktops and their notebooks. So I think the main reason they hadn't up till this point was memory and battery life issues. I think the advancements in the hardware we've seen the last few years, I will be absolutely shocked if the new iOS 5 doesn't not only have a really revamped notification system, I think you will see that live wallpaper, home screen, whatever you want to call it, where you'll be able to get your weather or your time or whatever it is. I think that's a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, with WDC kicking off next week, I mean, it's on. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Moving on. There was a study released that says the App Store tops the Android market in terms of making money. This company here, Distimo, their findings revealed that the Android market isn't just delivering that many apps to customers. They're saying that 25% of free applications and 79% of all paid applications have been downloaded fewer than 100 times worldwide. Only two paid apps in Google's app market has crossed the 500,000 download mark. And while there have been six App Store paid apps to get 500,000 downloads over 2 months, that's only U.S. sales. Basically, you can say people who on the Android market, they don't like to pay for apps. Basically, all the Android chatter that I've seen is that, you know, why would you want to pay for apps when you can get them for free? So there is a lot of piracy going on. That's not to leave out the iPhone as well, because for jailbroken people, there is Installist, which a lot of people use to sort of try before they buy. But I think on the Android market, it is just, you know, you get access to the piracy without, you know, jailbreaking or anything. You can just download it and install some sort of tweak, and there you go.
Well, I think Google like Apple, coverage of them is never that realistic. When Android first came out, everybody predicted nothing but doomsday. Oh, it's a total failure. They came out with only a couple handsets and the sales were dismal, and you just had everybody saying, oh, it's done. Now they're having a lot of success, and now their success is being exaggerated. As this study shows, their apps don't sell as well. The developers aren't doing as well. The individual phones don't sell as well. We always hear all this talk about, well, Android is now past the iPhone, but that's meaning all their phones combined. They don't have a single handset that sells even close to any iPhone version that there's been, or any even one carrier of the iPhone. It's becoming one of those devices that there's people, like as Marco Arment said, the guy who does Instapaper, says, he thinks half the success of Android is people walking into carriers who don't have the iPhone saying, hey, what's the closest thing you have to an iPhone? And they just kind of buy Android, because 2 years ago when you bought a Samsung phone, it had whatever Samsung operating system. Now you go in and buy the latest Samsung phone, it happens to have Android. A lot of Android users are just buying it because that's what it comes on. So I think Google is a long way from having kind of the mind share and the success in the App Store that Apple's having. So I always think that the comparisons between the two operating systems kind of get blown out of proportion, both successful, two totally different approaches. But if you're sitting there as a developer right now, I can't see anybody saying, oh, I'm just going to develop for Android. That would be a pretty silly thing to do.
Yeah. A lot of the times it comes down to people not, like you said, iPhones are sold out. What's the next best thing? Jump on, you know, to an Android phone. A lot of the times they are cheaper once time has passed. A lot of the phones that debuted, they're usually $199 for 3 years. Eventually they become free. So who doesn't want to turn down a free phone, right? If you're willing to sign a contract. But yeah, at the same time, I don't think there are a lot of Android apps that really wow you compared to the quality of apps that are in the App Store. There was a recent article today talking about one of the popular game emulators on Android was just removed suddenly. This one developer who had made a lot of money selling a game emulator, his account was closed. All of his apps were just wiped out of the Android market suddenly without warning. So that's a move on Google's part that would many people would say, hey, they're emulating Apple. Whatever happened to being open source and being open and free?
Well, that's the whole joke of it. In reality, the whole open thing is a marketing ploy. In reality, the Google system is not all that much more open than Apple. Half the time you're buying these Android phones, they're locked down. They have Verizon or AT&T or whoever has their own version of the operating system that you can't even update yourself. You have to root the phone, which is pretty much, I don't see any difference really between rooting and jailbreaking. Both phones kind of come out of the box to run a certain way. And if you really want to dig deeper, you can. So at the end of the day, I think that comparison's always overplayed as it is. I think both, when it comes to openness, are pretty much the same. They're just, Apple doesn't want to be open. Apple almost purposely markets like, hey, we've controlled this experience. Don't worry about viruses. Don't worry about other crap. Don't worry about apps crashing and ruining your experience. We're creating this for you. And Google's saying the exact opposite. Hey, we're going to leave it open, but we've seen time and time again, they're shutting down developers, shutting down apps all the time that don't meet them. So they don't act like they're curating their store, but at the end of the day, they are anyway. So they're far more similar than they're separate. It's just two companies taking two different approaches to the marketing.
Yeah. Let's move on to another story here. It says Apple, there's been a whole sort of malware scare right now for OS X users from this program called Mac Defender, which is a fake security software. Basically, it makes money by getting users to punch in their credit card numbers to, I guess, eliminate the program. Apple has responded that there's going to be an update to remove this from infected machines. I mean, it was funny because when Apple first responded to this Mac Defender, they had a help page on their website. Basically, all it said was drag the program into the trash bin and it will be gone.
Hey, this story is actually interesting from several levels. You could discuss how Apple handled it. There was reports of this thing affecting people for several weeks before Apple said anything. Then there was supposedly these leaked documents and Ed Bott saying he had inside sources saying that half the calls that Apple was receiving were about this, which I don't buy that for a minute, but I know a lot of people who run Macs and nobody has this thing, so I can't imagine 50% of their support calls were about it, but that's a whole other issue. Then there was the idea that Apple was actually telling their employees that they couldn't help people, just almost deny the problem, which I don't think probably was the best way of handling it. But then I think for people listening who weren't really following it, it is worth pointing out that this is kind of scareware or malware, if you will. It's not an actual virus. It's people who are coming over from the Windows thing. Your mom could send you an email that is infected and you just by clicking on it is going to start doing some nasty stuff to your system. You can just visit a web page and they can do things. So far, we haven't seen that on the Mac. This is actually a pop-up tricking you into downloading it. You're giving them permission to install it. You're literally putting your credit card in. So they're having to convince you to pay for this thing to actually be infected. So when suddenly every report on the internet was, oh my gosh, Mac's heading down this deadly path and it's now going to be full of viruses, I think people pushed the panic button a little sooner. And as I've always told my family, when people have come to me and said, is it true that Macs don't have viruses? I've always been clear to say the system isn't inherently safe. There's two reasons it doesn't have viruses. It's, in general, a little bit more secure probably of a system in some ways than Windows. And because it doesn't have a huge portion of the market, most of these malware people don't go after the Mac the same way. So as the Mac gets more popular, we're going to be more of a target. And the other thing is, you always have to be vigilant. I wouldn't run antivirus on my Mac, but I also wouldn't be putting my credit card in and downloading an app that I had no idea what it was. I would be skeptical of going on a torrent site and buying pirated apps. There's been times where they've been able to put some spyware and stuff in those things. So again, if you're just using common sense, you're not going to have these problems the same way a Windows user is, but it's also naive just to think that, hey, I have a Mac now and I can just do anything I want on my computer. There's no dangers. That's not true either.
Yeah, and I think the way that Apple has set up OS X in terms of any application that is going to be installed requires the administrator password. And that one simple addition can basically protect your system. If something wants to install, they need access and it requires your password. But I think someone also mentioned that there are variants of Mac Defender that actually would bypass that as well. So it'll be good to see this update come out. But like you said, it's just common sense, right? Just be aware of what you're doing. Just don't go to shady websites. Don't just randomly install things.
Exactly.
Another story here, Amazon. This is an interesting move. They're taking on the Mac App Store with their own Mac Downloads Store. And this basically has a whole range of software titles and games for Macs. While some major titles haven't made it into the Mac App Store, Amazon has them available. So this is really interesting that Amazon is going after the App Store. I know they're also going after Android as well. They have their own Android type of market that's specific to Amazon.
Story got overplayed because Amazon has always sold Apple software. So basically the only thing difference here is it's a separate part of the store now, and it gives you some ability to download a DMG file without actually having to have the CD mailed to you. As you mentioned, because they don't have the same restrictions as Apple, you've seen some apps that aren't in the Mac App Store, but it's still really no competition to the Mac App Store.
Yeah, I think, the Mac App Store is just, well laid out. Some of the titles there are really nice from the developers as well. But I mean, if you're wanting to buy a big box software title, it's good that there is another option out there. This has been ongoing here. There's a firm, Lodsys, I'd call them a patent troll. They've been suing developers or sending out legal threats saying that they own the patent to in-app purchases. Developers were basically worried about what was going to go down. Eventually, Apple has officially responded. They've dropped the hammer on these guys. Their legal team basically sent a letter to Lodsys saying that because Apple has licenses for the in-app purchase, it also applies to app makers. Basically, Apple is saying, our developers are protected by our license. Back off. If you want to play the game, we'll see you in court. And I don't know if you want to start a legal battle with Apple.
I'm just glad Apple came out this way. We discussed this story last week before Apple had made any announcement whatsoever. Personally, if I was a developer and I got a letter like this, I'd throw it in the garbage and not worry about it. But a lot of people really worry about these legal type of things. So there was a lot of concern. And there was even some top sort of Mac developers and Mac bloggers and iPhone developers kind of saying, hey, I don't think Apple will get involved in this. It's just part of doing business and make sure you handle it, which I think would have been really bad, could have really scared off, especially independent developers. So I'm glad that Apple's just come out here swinging, said, hey, we're licensing this for you. It applies to our third-party developers. Now take a hike. And now it'll be interesting to see what happens. I listened to several different podcasts this week that had people with various levels of knowledge about this type of stuff and different lawyers, and everybody felt pretty strongly that not only do these systems, are these type of patents, normally you are licensed through Apple. And the other thing is Apple doesn't usually get this stuff wrong. They have a huge legal team, and they wouldn't send out a letter like this unless they were confident they were right. And on the other hand, Apple probably wouldn't have even licensed this technology had it not. Apple doesn't tend to make those type of mistakes. They're not like an eBay who went and paid billions of dollars for Skype and then didn't, in their paperwork, even really get rights to the technology underneath it. Apple wouldn't make a mistake like that. So I think we might hear this story a little while for the next few weeks, but I think Lodsys or whatever you call them will just crawl back under the rock where they came from.
Yeah, I mean, how can they not expect Apple to defend and come to the aid of developers? So, I mean, maybe they did this on purpose, knowing that Apple would very well come and respond and try to settle this out of court, or, you know, even take on a legal battle. But it'll be interesting to see what they're trying to do. Obviously, they're trying to make money somehow. But yeah, like you said, throwing away some sort of threat, though, about court action in the States, that's probably not something people do a lot compared to Canada. I know some people, there are a lot more lawsuits down in the States compared to Canada in terms of people suing each other. So,
yeah, that certainly wasn't legal advice for me, but
yeah, note to self, don't just shred it. Yeah. I didn't get it.
I might be naive, but when it comes to anything legal, I always just have enough faith in the system to think that at the end of the day, the right thing is going to happen. That if a small little developer who had no clue that he was even infringing on this, I always just think at the end of the day, most judges have common sense. It might cause you some heartache. It might cost you some days off work to get there and some money. But at the end of the day, I don't think this was ever going to be a real threat because it was such a ridiculous, I mean, they shouldn't even have the patent to begin with. These idiots should be happy that Apple's paying them anything, let alone now trying to go after the developers. And it's not a coincidence, as we mentioned last week, that they were looking for such a microscopic amount of money, because I think they knew they were on shaky ground. But they were like, hey, if there's these certain developers and they're a mom and pop shop who's suddenly gone from not even being developers to now maybe making $1 million a year in sales, maybe we can get our little piece of that. I think that's what it was about. And I think now Apple will shut them down and we won't hear anything about this.
Right. Moving on, here is a report that's Apple's Music Cloud service will auto add iTunes store tracks. This is the next thing Apple's music locker. Reports have been that Apple has secured, terms with three of the big four record labels. The fourth one, they're going to be landing that soon. This is talking about the cloud music service, where instead of having users upload your entire tracks to a locker service, the new quote-unquote iCloud service will automatically have all of your iTunes library stored in the cloud. Most likely they'll be utilizing Apple's $1 billion North Carolina data center. Business Week reports that the service will scan your digital library in iTunes and it'll mirror this collection. There has been a patent that's been revealed that shows there will be some sort of local storage on your device to set up a buffer when you're streaming tracks over a network. Is this the future of iTunes and getting access to your music? I mean, right now, how much music do you carry? Would you use a cloud service? Another part of this report is that this service will not be free. It will be paid, most likely a subscription service, which will please, the music industry, having millions and millions of people having a monthly subscription service for music.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm looking forward to this rumor being put to bed. Hopefully this gets announced next week at WWDC and we'll know exactly what Apple has up their sleeve. I love the idea of Apple automating a bunch of this stuff. I'm a huge music fan, but even the way I access music is really kind of changing all the time. I personally don't love the idea of subscription music. There's part of me that still wants to own the music, but I find that the prices are so ridiculous that I don't really want to support it. So if there was a cheap monthly situation that could combine maybe streaming some music you didn't have and then having access to the music you did own through the cloud would be great. I use the home sharing on my iPhone sometimes when I'm at home. In the past, there's been various free apps that have allowed you to kind of fingerprint all the tracks on your Mac and then have your iTunes running all the time. And then you could have this free iPhone app that you could stream your music across. And I've done it. I've set it up mostly just to test, but then I've never found that I've continued to use it because it's a little bit of a pain to do. You got to set it up. You got to make sure your iTunes is running, and there's all these barriers to entry. If Apple can then come out with a system that's, hey, either through a whole MobileMe package, you have this included, or some really reasonable monthly fee, they handle everything, where it's just like I click one button and then 10 minutes later I'm off on my iPhone or my iPad and I have access to all my music, that would be pretty great. But if it ends up costing a lot of money and you can only stream your own music and you don't have any access to like a Pandora type feature or an RDO type feature where you can just kind of download and sample music you don't own, I can't see this being a big hit. I think people are moving away all the time from paying for their music that way, and it's, I hope the record labels are finally getting through their head that they better take what they can get instead of keep putting all these barriers up, or they're just going to continue to lose more and more customers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to get people to pay for music. You can combat that with cheap, as we've seen from Amazon's recent experiment with selling Lady Gaga's album for 99 cents. You know, that album cost them over $7, and they were selling it at 99 cents at a loss to generate some publicity for their music store. Amazon already does have a cloud drive music service, and they launched ahead of Apple alongside Google. Both of these are major competitors. It'll be interesting to see what Apple reveals.
Well, this rumor is great. I think this is the Amazon service is decent because it's everything you buy is just instantly in the cloud, and they run a promotion where if you buy just one album, then you get an extra 20 gigs. The Google service is a joke at this point right now. It's not even available worldwide, but even if it was, you just basically have to upload your own music and then can't even re-download it. So it's not like you're even creating a nice backup for yourself. So that system's, to me, DOA. If Apple can do what this rumor says, the other key issue here will be, will it only be music you've bought from iTunes? So if I have 20,000 songs in my library, but 19,000 of them I bought somewhere else on CD or did whatever, got them by whatever means, if I can't upload those, if that will be what I find interesting. Will the labels be forward thinking enough to say, hey, a lot of these people burned their own CDs, a lot of these people got it through other legitimate reasons, and even if they did pirate this music originally, we'll take the licensing fees to keep streaming it. It would actually be a way for them to monetize some of them to the songs that were previously stolen. But I have a feeling they're not that forward thinking. Hopefully they are, because I think that could be a killer feature for them. Suddenly a way to monetize some previously lost revenue. And it would be a system that I think most people could get behind. Again, if the price is really cheap and it works really well, I think people could get behind this.
Yeah. Can't wait for next week and to see what WWDC has in store. There was also another report that Apple has been inviting members of international press to the keynote. In particular, the first rumor started about a member of the British press was invited to specifically attend the keynote. People were very wary of this particular invite. Another rumor came along, and this one was backed up by a tweet by an Australian tech reporter. He said that Apple PR had contacted him and invited him to the keynote. So suddenly he did delete his tweet, which that just leads to, you know, evidence that something big is coming at WWDC, and Apple's reaching out to members of the international press. Now, I think it doesn't take Apple to invite you to know that something big is going to happen. I mean, it'd be better to just attend WWDC and wait to see what's going to happen instead of not going and realizing that you've missed one of the biggest launches of all time.
Well, this was the dumbest story of the week by far, because let's assume that Apple literally invited everybody ever, every journalist they could, who has ever been a part of any of their event, they went out of their way to invite them. Everyone right away takes that, oh, if Apple's inviting everybody, that must mean there's something big in the keynote. Oh, that big thing must be the new iPhone or something to that level. Wrong. Every WWDC keynote has been a big event. They always make a huge deal of it. There's always important announcements, and they've already announced that it's the future of OS X and the future of iOS. So even if there's no iPhone or no hardware or nothing new and surprising, just unveiling the next two versions of their two major operating systems is big enough news that you'd invite all these people. So I don't read anything into these invites. I will stand by what I said, and it's a non-committal answer, but it's what I've been saying on this podcast from day one. Will I be shocked if an iPhone 4 or 5 get announced next Monday? No, I will not. Will I be shocked if it doesn't? No, I will not. It could go either way. We've seen the rumors. Apple's perfectly capable of having an iPhone 4S ready to rock next week, or I think their sales are good enough that they could wait until the fall if that's what they decided to do. So we'll find out next Monday. We'll have a show next week and talk all about it. But it's ridiculous, all these different blogs saying, oh, well, because they invited these couple international press guys, it must mean a new iPhone's coming or some other major hardware announcement.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Apple, TechCrunch said that the same, they are saying that the same team that deals with iOS is the same team that deals with Apple PR, which I thought was a complete joke. Why would the PR team be the same team that deals with iOS? Maybe they are, we don't know, but I mean, WWDC did sell out on the first day, but I know there are press passes available. But like you said, you know, is Apple going to unveil the next iPhone here? We don't know. It's been pretty tight-lipped. I think Apple does have something up their sleeve. They always do. They're trying to go back to the days when they'll just announce something, bam, and here it is. It's not going to be found in a bar, but they did emphasize that, you know, the keynote will focus on the future of iOS and OS X. So we'll see how long it is, and I look forward to it.
Yeah.
But let's move on. Some app news. Just going to run down the list, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about each app. LA Times. Is this Uvu?
Yeah.
Hound, NBC Nightly News, Photo, Forge 2, Candy Train, and Games Spot. Couple updates: Dead Space, Opera Browser, and I put in here some Memorial Day sales from EA and Gameloft.
Yeah, just go over some of those quickly. Los Angeles Times is the latest newspaper app to arrive. Again, very good app, not all that much different from the New York Times or the Washington Post or can't remember if that's, or what, yeah, maybe the Washington Post is the one we looked at before. Really good app, far as I can tell so far. They make you sign up, but you don't actually have to have a subscription to the paper. So I was able to create an account and didn't seem to be running into any limits. So again, if you're either in the LA area or just interested in another free newspaper, it's worth checking out. I think the notable thing about Uvu is they're a bit of a Skype contender that came out a couple years ago, but suddenly people are getting interested in them again because of Skype recently being sold to Microsoft. And the unique thing about their app is you can have up to 5 or 6 different people. So it's actually group video chat on an iPhone. It just came out, so Gary and I haven't had a chance to test it yet. But if you're currently an Uvu user or want to try that, interesting that you could do video chat on an iPhone. NBC Nightly News, I'm super impressed with this app. I should have checked if it's available in Canada. It's definitely available in the US. And what I love about this app is not only is it super slick, really easy to navigate, all kinds of great extra features to share video on Twitter or comment right within the app. NBC Nightly News has their own social networking things that you can kind of interact with them. But super amazing video quality. And my favorite part is you can just watch the complete episode. You launch the app, pick the day, and instead of having to flip through a bunch of different clips that they've given us permission to check out, you can just say view the entire episode, and there you go. Not worried about it cannibalizing their TV numbers or whatever else. I just love seeing forward-thinking television programs offering their whole thing right on an app like that.
Okay. Keep on going.
And the other is GameSpot. I just put in there because that used to be GamePro, was a magazine that I always had when I was a kid, getting all the latest like Nintendo news.
Oh, and, yeah, GamePro.
And now it's, I think GamePro got bought by GameSpot, and the app is actually very good. It's, you can pick by console, you can pick just by news, reviews. Again, I couldn't find anything that they were limiting the content. All the latest reviews, right, easy to read right there on your iPad. Watch all their game previews, videos. Again, just another example of these different media companies realizing, hey, the iPad is a great device. It has this really captive audience. Let's get our content out there and not like other people in the past have tried to restrict it. It always reminds me going back to these Canadian television broadcasters who look at our great iPad app and there's four episodes. No, just give it to us all. Find out a way to monetize it. Let your advertisers know that, hey, we had 1 million people online and 100,000 watched on our iPad. Eyeballs are eyeballs. This should all work out. We shouldn't be having this conversation every week. So great version of a magazine that, again, isn't trying to restrict it or sell you subscriptions. Just get our content out in this really great app and people will use it.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to quickly mention that there's been an update to the Justin TV app. I actually haven't been using the Justin TV app lately, but one of our readers at iPhone in Canada mentions that the app, this latest update, has actually made the app a lot worse than it was before. It used to be free, but now it's $4.99 apparently. If you want to get rid of the ads and stream in high definition, you need to pay $2.99 per week. So apparently this latest Justin TV app has it's changed the way the app has always been, which it's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. I understand from their position, being that it's a free website, it's another way. Again, we can just talk about monetizing this stuff every single week. So I'll give them credit for at least trying to do it, but it's really hard to provide something for free and then take a step backwards. The other thing is there's so many other competitors. Justin TV, when it first came out, was actually a great way to get video on your iOS device that wasn't being made available elsewhere. Now most podcasts and different shows might still be on Justin TV, but then they have an iTunes version or HTML5 version or some other way. So the content on Justin TV isn't as interesting as it once was.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Justin TV was almost like the pioneer of this video. Now it's there are a lot more other competitors out there. One of the updates I'll talk about is Opera Mini browser for iOS. This update is actually worth using, whereas their initial release was just, I hated it. The zooming was off, websites didn't look right, just in terms of the overall browsing experience, it wasn't fun at all. But this latest update has been, it's huge for them. If you want to use an alternative browser other than Safari, take a look at Opera. There have been other browsers out there as well. So, I mean, this might be a little bit too late for the folks at Opera, but it seems that they want to continue to have a presence in the App Store.
Well, knowing that Opera was updated this week and that we were going to mention it on the show, I based my picks of the week on that theme. And I will just say right off the bat, I completely disagree with everything you just said. I think Opera, not holding anything any back, is a piece of crap. It's slow, it's janky, it doesn't have any extra features. it still breaks web pages. I happen to be a web developer. I happen to be a guy who develops and codes everything perfect. I check with W3C and make sure everything's up to spec, and this thing is still breaking web pages that still render, like, I have web pages that still can render perfectly in Internet Explorer 6, but somehow Opera finds a way to destroy them. But I do agree that the Safari browser in itself, in certain ways, is starting to lag behind. So I have two alternatives for people, and one's free that I just thought was interesting. It's a new app this week, and it's called iChromy, I-C-H-R-O-M-Y. And the developers are basically advertising it as Chrome comes to iOS. Of course, it's not Chrome because it's not built by Google. But at the end of the day, Google and Safari are both based on WebKit. So there's a little bit to it. But the big thing with this iChromy is it's free and it brings you tabbed browsing similar to Chrome on your Mac or your PC. So if you're looking for something that looks really clean and simple and kind of runs the same quality as Safari, but you want tabbed browsing, then iChromy is at least worth downloading to try it out. Very limited in terms of features. You can save, you can make bookmarks, but there's no way to import bookmarks. You can send pages to Twitter and Facebook, but there's no other real interesting technology. The browser I'm going to recommend for people who want to try a different browser is iCab. And I can tell you with iCab, if iOS had a default setting that said make iCab my default browser, I would. It's that good. Right now what I do is I have a bookmarklet in Safari, so when I'm in Twitter, kicks me to Safari, and then I can hit another little button in Safari that then instantly sends me to iCab. iCab looks a lot like Safari. Nice clean interface, has the toolbar on the iPad version, which is nice, but it also has the toolbar on the iPhone version, which Safari on the iPhone doesn't have. It has tabs, which is nice. So to me, it's the perfect combination of Safari and that iChromy. You get all the features of Safari, but you can still have that tabbed browsing, so you don't have to do that open window. It's just tabs at the top. You can sync your bookmarks through iTunes or through Dropbox. You can download files. It's like basically a full, it's like being on your computer on your iPhone or your iPad. You get to a file that you want to download, you hit download. No longer getting that error saying, oh, this browser doesn't support downloading. Just downloads it right into the app, and then you have a choice. You can either grab that file next time you sync through iTunes, or you can save it right to your Dropbox. It also has plugins like you would on your browser, so you can have it instantly send things to Instapaper. There's an Evernote thing. There's an AirPlay. There's about 20 or 30 different plugins. Now, of course, you can't just go to, say, Firefox or Chrome and download those type of plugins, but it has special plugins that people, this developer has been doing such a good job for so long that it actually has a lot of support. So in that browser theme, $1.99, I highly recommend iCab if you're looking to do some more powerful stuff on your iOS browser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. Mobile Safari is great. However, the opening and closing of windows does take a lot longer than instantly switching to a tab within your window there.
And really, it doesn't bother me when you're just kind of surfing around and or you're looking for things. As much as it's opening another window, it's doing it pretty quick. But if you're actually working on something and you have two or three tabs that you need open and you have to keep referencing, nothing beats just being able to tap on the tabs. And the other thing I should mention about iCab, and I can't guarantee this works on the iPhone because it would be difficult to do, but it works for sure on the iPad, is it actually has a whole gestures menu in the thing. So you can actually do a three-finger swipe side to side to flip through tabs, and it has just a whole bunch of extra gestures that you can turn on and off. The settings menu in iCab will just blow your mind, all the different things you can control. You can have it mimic other browsers. So if you're working for some company, and I'm sure we have some listeners who some work system still looks to see if they're on Internet Explorer, you can set the user agent as Internet Explorer, so then you can access your work system, whatever it is. The amount of options this iCab has is incredible, and for $1.99, one of the best values in the entire App Store, as far as I'm concerned.
Have you been using Terra web browser?
I did download that one before, and I don't remember being overly impressed or not impressed. But there are several, if you're trying to save the $1.99, there are a whole bunch of other ones you can try, but none of them kind of have all the options of an iCab. But
yeah, I think right now the Terra browser, it's actually seems to be either removed from the App Store. It says it's not in the Canadian store anymore. It's now seems to be only in the US store. But yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, if you're actually doing work and you need to reference something, popping back and forth can be a big pain in the arse there. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, to follow up what you just said there, I actually downloaded pretty much every single browser from the App Store. I put them all in one folder with the intention of kind of checking them all out and then reviewing them on the show, or even maybe doing an article discussing all the great reasons to buy each one. And the more I used them all, just nothing compared to iCab. So I just kind of scrapped the project and said, hey, if you're looking for if you're looking for an alternative browser, save yourself the heartache, pay the $1.99. You're not going to find anything better. And that's the way to go.
Okay. I'll have to write that one down as always. A couple picks here that I've noticed that are really great here. One is called GeoRheem. This is an iPhone app. And what it does is it allows you to set a reminder for you based on the location of where you're at. So most of the times when you're trying to think of something like, oh, I need to pop by the hardware store to pick up something, or I need to go to the grocery store to buy milk, whatever. By the time you've driven past the store, you've forgotten about it. GeoRheem lets you set the location of the store and lets you set sort of a radius. So when you're within a certain radius, it uses your GPS location. You'll receive a notification on your phone that says, go buy milk at Safeway or whatever. So this is, I think the app is 99 cents. It's pretty neat. It's worked from my tests. I'm going to have a review coming, and I do have some codes to give away, so stay tuned for that. Another app that I found out about today from TUAW, it's called Funnel. It's a news app for all you Google News freaks out there. It basically turns Google News into just, you know, the popular headlines are in larger fonts, and then each time you swipe, you go to a different section of Google News based on color, and it basically puts all the headlines in easy to read formats. If you want to quickly scan the headlines, Funnel is a great way to do that. It's free. It's on the iPhone. This one here, the next one's called Discover. It's for the iPad. It's basically turns Wikipedia into a readable magazine type format for your iPad. And I found it to be amazing. It's really nice to be able, it's almost like Instapaper for Wikipedia for your iPad, and Discover is free. So those are my app picks of the week. And I've been having some fun with these apps.
Yeah. I want to look into all those because I right now use an app called Articles, which is basically Instapaper for Wikipedia, gives every single article a really nice font and just plain white background, and does a really neat thing with the pictures where they leave them in line, but then you can also tap them to get the bigger version. But that's a paid app that I've recommended before, so I'm interested in checking out this Discover and the Google News one, because I'm always on top of all the news apps. It's a surprise when slip by me. And then what you were saying about the location app, to me that's one of the holy grails of the entire App Store. If there could be eventually a location aware app that literally tells me, hey, you're here and you need to do some of these things, I mean, that's killer. I've tried four or five that claim to do that, and none really work well. So that one sounds like it has some potential.
Yeah,
so
I was a bit skeptical. I had to put it to the test. I set the location of the Burrard Bridge here in Vancouver, and I basically set a memo to say, drive across the bridge. And as we approached the bridge in my car, lo and behold, boom, I received a notification, almost like a text message, says, you know, memo, GeoRheem, drive across the bridge. And if you don't read the message, it'll auto give you another notification to remind you again. So that was just for my first test. It did work well. So I'm going to test it a bit more. But from my initial test, it's a pretty cool app. And it's been out for a while, but the developers continued to support it and make it better. So look forward to that.
Yeah, I'm going to try that because, like I said, I have tried several that didn't work as promised. One more app I'll recommend that I've actually had on my list to recommend for weeks and I keep forgetting or we run out of time. I downloaded this the minute it came out. It's a really cool app that really has not been getting very little buzz. I finally read a few blogs, picked it up this week, but it's called Super 8. And what it is it's based around the new Steven Spielberg, J.J. Abrams movie. It's a movie tie-in. But unlike most movie tie-ins that are either just a cheesy app with some movie trailers or some really bad game, this is actually a video camera app. And basically, the entire app is set up to make your iPhone become a Super 8 camera. So when you launch the app, it's set up to look actually like a case. And you can press the camera, and when you turn it on, it makes clicking. And when you're filming it, it's making that filming noise. And then when you're done filming it, you access your camera roll by picking out little cartridges. So everything's made to look really old school, like a Super 8 camera. When you want to watch your video, you actually have to pull down a screen that the projector turns on. It has the lines going through it. And the neat thing is it actually has a really cool Super 8 effect, which other apps in the App Store do that and charge you for. So it's a great way to get these free apps. And then when you're playing back your movies, every once in a while you get these little hidden clips from the movie. I think it's supposed to be sort of a game at the same time where you're putting together these clues from the movie. But if you just want to try it just to kind of take a picture of film of your kids or your dog or whatever and have it look like it's from a 1960 Super 8 camera, it works really well. And it says free for a limited time only. I would think they would want to keep it free because it's partly promoting the movie, but it's free right now. Check it out. I'm actually really excited to see that Super 8 movie, and this is a cool app tie-in. Nice to see a movie think a little outside the box. It's kind of common sense to want to have an app to tie in with your movie, considering how popular apps are, but most of them kind of just do these cheesy things. This is actually a really unique, usable, innovative app to try to promote the movie, so I was impressed with that.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. I'm going to download that right now. It's more than just promoting the movie, like you said. It's almost giving you the capabilities of a full fledged. It's almost like an app. What's that, Cam? Appstomatic or app?
Hipstomatic. One of those. And then there's a video one that I can't remember right now. But the nice thing about this app is you can keep it all within the app, so you can keep using that Super 8 gimmick where you're looking through your movies and their little tin cans with the written dates on them. But if you want to export to your camera roll, so they don't lock you in. So if you do want to put a video together, you can send it out to Twitter or just save it to your camera roll. So you're not stuck within that Super 8 gimmick, but it is pretty neat to hear all those sounds. And like I said, it's kind of funny to actually have to pull down a screen to watch it. And then it flickers, the light goes on, and you're literally watching your video back on this little screen on your phone. It's really done.
I can't wait to try that app. Okay, so I think we are out of time. Once again, thanks for listening to the iPhone Podcast. Please, please, please rate us on iTunes. Your feedback is very important to us. We'd love to hear your thoughts, any recommendations, suggestions. You can follow the show and provide feedback by visiting theiphonepodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. I'm located at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada, and Justin is at twitter.com/JustinLouie. Thanks again for listening, folks. We will see you next week right after WWDC. So we look forward to talking to you then. Thanks for listening.